Bibles and turn to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth. It's just four chapters. I ask everybody this week to read that. I know Tommy did from what he said. And I hope you've had that opportunity as well to remind yourself of the information that is in this book. As I was talking to some people this week about this book, I was surprised to hear that some had an opinion that Naomi was a villain in all of this. And I thought, how in the world would they come up with something like that? But anyway, there's probably a lot of takes on this book than what I have been sharing with you last week and this week. And hopefully we will all be blessed. This book is not about Naomi or Ruth. It's actually about God and his people. And that is no doubt the reason, the bigger picture, why this book was included in the scriptures and was inspired to be able to make it to us to today. And so hopefully we'll be able to step back and see just how relative this greatest love story here that is depicted here is, far more than involving Ruth and Naomi and the family of Elimelech. And so hopefully we will all be touched by the things that we discuss today. May I start with these three words? Three words that probably every single one of us has said from time to time. I love you. Hopefully every one of us has said that at some point. And hopefully we meant it as well. That is being said in this book, and we're going to be talking about the many ways that it is being said. These three words resonate with purpose and passion and the pursuit of romance. But it is God's romance, not necessarily just man's romance. And this romance is not sappy sweetness or with the intention to blind us or have some kind of agenda that we might get something or befuddle us. Now, the world uses that phrase all the time with maybe those intentions. But this is given with this in mind, that love is determined to protect and cherish. And it is evidence with self-sacrifice. That is the picture of love that is depicted here. This love gives, it serves, it transforms, and it enriches each party involved in this love. You see, these words are never spoken alone. These words, as the Bible talks about them, are always evidenced by faithfulness and a determination to draw you even closer in to heart. And of course, what does this have to do with Naomi and Ruth? Well, remember last week we left them determined to go back to the place that is called the house of bread and praise, Bethlehem. And actually, when they got there, being that God is now in the cycle of blessing Israel instead of punishing them, it is a place of bread. And so when they get there, they've got a need of what? Food, bread, certainly. And so that's the practical need. And Ruth asked Naomi, can I go out to the fields and glean some? And so gleaning is not a term that we use a lot today. So let's look and see about what God says about the law of gleaning. I'm not going to read this. You write it down and read it. Leviticus 19, Deuteronomy 24. We see that God, he told his people when they harvest their crops, well, no matter what they were, in this case it is barley and wheat, they were not supposed to harvest around the edges. They were supposed to leave that in the field. And if by chance they leave a sheath out in the field after they have moved, and they shouldn't even go back after it. There were some incidences where over 30% of the crop was left in the field. Just so the fatherless and the widows and the sojourners would have a resource to where that they could feed themselves. After all, they didn't have fast food back then, remember? And so there had to be some way for them to be able to eat, even as they travel or when they find themselves in dire circumstances, such as Ruth and Naomi. That was part of the law. And so in chapter 2 and verse 3, we see that she left, she went, and she gleaned in the field of the reapers. And she happened to come upon the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Now, I don't know about you, that should make us smile. It should make us grin a little bit at least. Because what we do here, we start to begin to see the moment of divine matchmaking starting to take place. You see, God is working behind the scenes for everything to work just as it should. It's timing, it's way, it's location, and God is involved with this. Now, you might wonder, does God still work that way? Does he still interact with people that way? I think sometimes we might lose sight of the moments that he is preparing in order to move us into his love story to grab and capture our hearts. We miss those things. Go right over our head too often. Well, look with me to chapter 2 in Ruth, and let's read verses 8 through 13. Then Boaz said to Ruth, when he saw her, obviously had done a little bit of research on who's this gleaning in his field. He says to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to another field, nor leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field where they are reaping and go after or follow after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And by the way, when you're thirsty, you go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn out. Well, that is very kind of him, isn't it? Yes, we're seeing him now. And if you will, may I go ahead and preempt this a little bit? He's in the figure of God in this shadow of events in the Old Testament. Well, here's the way she responds to such kindness. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? Remember, she was from Moab, which was a place of sewage. You know, God described Moab as a pot where you put wastewater. Why have I found this favor in your sight? And then he said to her, I have found, lost my place. And Boaz said to her, verse 11, and all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, how you left your father and mother, your native land, and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for all that you've done. Many times we hear that expression given today. Oh, may the Lord set you, you know, in an evil way. Here, this is a good way. This is a blessing. May the Lord repay you for what good you've done. A full reward to be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing that you have come to take refuge. And now she says, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I'm not even one of your servants. Now, remember last week we looked at a lot of names that meant something. And here is another opportunity. We looked at these and their meaning and how they fit into this story. Well, now we have a new name, Boaz, which means strength. Actually, in chapter 2 and verse 1, he's described as a great man or a worthy man, the ESV puts it. So this fits into this story. So let's step back now into the story. We see that God is a God who sees, he notices, he's paying attention. Now you might think, well, that reminds me of something. Yeah, it should. You remember long before this, in Abraham's time, there was a lady, a woman that was abused. She was beaten down in spirit, weary, and she had to flee. And she prayed and poured out her heart in anguish to God, and God heard her anguish and sent an angel to her to comfort her and give her a promise. Her name, Hagar. And she said this of God, the name of the Lord that she spoke is, you are the God who sees. You have heard. Also, you see him. And that was the description that she coined there for God. So now back to our story. Naomi and Ruth experience this same kind of divine notice in the barley field by El Roi, that is the God who sees. Covers her with protection, power, promises. Does God shine that way through us? Would someone say something like that about us? And another thing, does God really care that much about us? Here was a widow and her daughter, and all of the men in the family had died in the land of sewage, and God would care for them enough to do all this. Is this just coincidence, or is this God showing love, romancing these individuals? Well, before you ask or answer that negatively, let me remind you of some verses here. Yes, God does care. He notices. He pays attention. He offers gracious kindness to us all, protection and power. And he gives us a wonderful promises if we will serve him. And God does care even about those that die. Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 32. He said, I have no pleasure in the death of one who dies. He says in 2 Peter, he's not willing that anyone would perish, but that all would come to repentance. He desires all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. He even dispatches angels to minister to those who will to go and have salvation. Yes, God cares. And he cares about Naomi and Ruth. And actually makes them part of the pieces of the puzzle, as Tommy related to us from Luke a minute ago, that they even fit into this puzzle of the Messiah coming one day. So our learning that he sees, that he knows, in our time, will feed hope, will encourage joy, and actually will open a door of peace to flourish in our own heart. Do we have that door open? Or do we? Give me the facts, Jack. Don't bother me with the ooey-gooey stuff. Oh, you're missing a blessing if you think that way. So, is it possible for us to open our eyes that we might be able to see just how wonderful he is? When we do, and we look for, and when we see that he is caring about us, when we look for him, we can see his fingerprints all over the place in moments in our lives. When we begin to see that love and notice that attention that he plays with us, that he pays with us, and many details in our life. If we will let these moments reach our hearts and see the love and attention he's playing, and how he provides. Not as our slave is he rescuing us. That we use him like a ripcord. We're falling. Oh, I guess I better, oh Lord help me, and pull him like, no. We're not talking about using God. We're talking about God romancing us to give him our heart. It will move us closer to him than ever before, if we will just reach after and see his activity in our lives. A growing awareness of God in his presence and his infinite, powerful, loving hands active all around us will deepen our love toward him. It will enable us to catch a glimpse of God's providential plan and how we fit into the tapestry that he is weaving of the love of man, the redemption of man. He's weaving us right into his picture of tapestry. Boaz is playing that part. The people of Bethlehem were playing that part to woo, to win the heart and change that heart of Naomi from bitter to love and joy, as her name describes. He has worked through nations and people and across history and through time to make sure that we do not miss the opportunity to hear his whisper of love, to be invited into this love story which we were designed for. We can hear it in the simple creation of a butterfly or a flower. The other day we went for a walk, took the grandkids up into the mountain, and the laurels were blooming. And one of the kids grabbed one of those, and they looked at that. Would you look at this? And to look at the detail of such a simple little flower, there is nothing simple about it. It is one of the most complex flowers I've ever seen. All of the filaments in the middle, and then you turn the flower over, and it looks just like a crown on the back, with all of the diadems sticking up. It is amazing. Have you ever taken the time to look at one of those flowers? I mean, there is evidence and fingerprints and the glorious creation all around us, but sometimes we just don't see it because we're worried about someone doing terrorism around us or the political parties that are always grappling for power. Oh, this story is much bigger than the here and the now. In this story of Ruth, God has shown great love toward Naomi with his gentle wooing her heart, helping her to heal and to overcome the terrible wounds left by the years living a life of seduction. Remember, that's our choice. Are we going to be seduced by the world or romanced by our God? There's the question. There is no middle ground. So Ruth and Naomi's story is not their story. It's our story. Naomi, when she got to Bethlehem, you remember, she entered the city. In Ruth chapter 1 in verse 19, we see that she enters the city, and it happened as she came into Bethlehem that all the city, this is 1 in verse 19, all the city of Bethlehem was excited because of them. So this was not any just sliding in someplace. No, they noticed that she had returned, and they were excited. And when they came to her, no doubt they were thinking, welcome home, let's throw a party, let's rejoice. But no, Naomi would have nothing of that. She said, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me back home empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? Whoo! Now that's the kind of person that will light up the room when they leave. Have we ever been bitter? We ever been soured like that? Well, here's, don't give up. God is not through with her. Yes, she's bitter. She blamed God. She returned down now to the house of bread, to the presence of God and Almighty. And even though she was bitter and blamed God, God's not through with her. She returned home, and therefore by her return, God has been invited back into her life. Even though we may get wrapped up in all in that kind of sorts, Ruth now, as things unfold, they still need food. So she returns to the field. And as she goes out to the field, Boaz tells her, come here, have some bread. Dip in our wine. And she sat down with the reapers, and he passed her some roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied and even had leftovers, which was not common back then. And she ate, and she rose to glean. And he told her, he says, let her glean, or he told his workers, let her glean even among the sheaves. Do not reproach her, or even leave some bundles for her. Just leave her to glean, and do not rebuke her. And she worked. She worked from morning till the evening. And then she went and beat it all out and ended up with over 2 weeks worth of grain to consume, which was unheard. Boaz, you see, had offered her a place of protection. There was this foreigner, this outsider. He was kind. He gave her a means of food. And he also bestowed upon her generously these gifts. And it was totally selfless concerning her. But one of the greatest things that he gave her was he gave her the dignity and the honor and the respect that was not due her, but gave it to her nonetheless, and lifts up her spirit by valuing her so that she can go home and tell Naomi, I have a friend indeed. You remember, this is not just a story about Ruth and Naomi. It's even bigger than the house of Elimelech. It is a glimpse into the way of Christ and how Jesus romances us. How he participates with us, wanting our hearts to be given to him. You see, sin is the problem that caused all of this. Sin made one an alien, an outsider, poor, broken, desperate, alone. That's what sin causes. But Jesus invites us and makes us a place to belong, a community of people. He opens up the storehouses of his riches and fills our empty souls. He covers us with his own strength, infusing our weakness with his love to where that we become full because of it. But remember, Mara's heart, Naomi, scar-covered, bitter, is touched, though, by this romance that God is displaying through his servant's kindness. Do we have that effect on people? Do we let him shine through us to cause that kind of reaction? Well, she listens to Ruth every day when she comes home. Parents, can you remember that? Can you relate to this? Just waiting on her to come in the door, and then Ruth opens up and tells her, shows her the impressions that God is active in this. And as she unfolds and tells all the kindness that is being done, Ruth recognizes that's God's fingerprints all over this. And her daughter-in-law's blessings become the lens through which she is able to begin to see the goodness of God again. She concludes, God is watching over them for good. God is showing His love. God cares about us two women, full of grief and despair. How seduction had left its scar on this family of Elimelech. Yet, God has shown loving kindness to them. While we're thinking about this, again, remember this is bigger than them. Do we see God that way? Have we become blind to His endless, countless beauties around us? And how much the sin following the world, being influenced by the world, has actually cost us when we were following our own wisdom rather than His? Can you look and see the barrage of horrible things that have come because of our not serving the Lord? Alienation, alone, impoverished, desperate, bleak hope of the future. If we find ourselves there, and every one of us has, it's of age, what we need is a redeemer. A redeemer. God can give us a clean page, white as snow, and He can cover us with blood red ink as He writes His love story on our hearts. God's love is so vast, so deep, so rich. He is pursuing us. He desires for us to be folded into His heart and to claim us for His very own. But there's one problem. The next word is if. He will not force us into this. He leaves it up to us. If. Let's go back to the story. Ruth continues gleaning day by day, both barley and wheat harvest, 6 to 8 weeks of work, daily returning to Naomi, telling her the news about Boaz's kindness and generosity, protection and providence. And Naomi's love is growing. Her bitterness is diminishing. Hope's flickering flame is growing and becoming a blaze of love to God. Again, it's growing inside her heart. In the harvest, if you can picture this, they've got this mountain, this pile of grain that they have harvested that has been gleaned and also taken off of the chaff. And so they've got this big pile of seed there. And the workers actually don't go home at night. They actually, they might visit home, but they have to come back and guard. And the way they guard that pile of food is they all sleep with their heads around the pile of grain. They all put their heads toward the grain and their feet are sticking out. And that's the way they sleep during time of harvest. Now that's important in just a few minutes. Even though Naomi belongs in this town, that's where she came from, she left full, came back empty, God's law provides a way for her to be restored. That is through a process called a kinsman redeemer. In Deuteronomy chapter 25 verses 5 through 10, we see this, and I'll just won't read all of that, but here's what God's law provides for an occasion like this, when someone comes back and they are in such dire straits, that this kinsman redeemer, to redeem them, bring them back into good standing, they must be a kin, blood kin. He must be able to redeem and thus have enough resources. He must be willing to redeem. And he must be free from need to redeem himself. And so these are things that he's got to do. He cannot be in debt himself. He cannot be a slave or in debt himself. And lastly, this person must be asked by the one who is indebted. So there's the method. Naomi knows about this. And so now she determines now is the time. It's at the end of harvest. All is well. So she instructs Ruth about exactly what to do. So she tells her, and this may be pretty good advice for some of us as well, whenever we have to get a very dire situation taken care of, there's some good wisdom here. She says, first, go wash yourself and clean up. She says, anoint yourself to smell good. Put on fresh clothes. Present yourself, if you will, even as a bride-to-be. And then go lie at his feet, presenting yourself with surrender and humility. Now, all of this is very important, but especially that last point, because there will nothing good come of any of this unless they're willing to humbly surrender themselves. We've got to have that kind of attitude. Now, while we're talking about this, notice the title of the screen says, Plan of Redemption. It is not just about Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. This is also about us. We, too, need to be washed in the blood of the Lamb through baptism. We need to be anointed with the fragrance of Christ to look and behave and smell like Christ. We must take this soiled clothes of sin off and put on righteousness to be changed, transformed all the way down to our heart. In other words, repentance. And we also need to lay our hearts and lives in total submission to the feet, before the feet of our Redeemer, Jesus Christ. So God's romancing finds its melody in this fact. When we seek out our Redeemer and ask him to take us under his wing. Washing, anointing, surrendering, changing these soiled clothes, and then action to seek the redemption in total submission is absolutely essential. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, love stories like this just don't happen every day. They're few and far between. Sometimes it takes a lifetime. Sometimes it takes a whole lifetime of misery and pain and suffering and all of the wreckage in our past. We come to grips. Well, it just is not working my way. I have just made a mess of my life. But God continues to whisper. Whisper promises of hope and invites us to open our hearts to dream. To dream of heaven. Humble faithfulness proves itself over time and gives us a place of rest and the peace to which we can build our hope. Ruth obeys. She does do exactly what Naomi suggests. And as he wakes up because she uncovered his feet, they talk. She says, she requests protection, provision, belonging, hope. She brings nothing at all in exchange for this. Nothing. She brings nothing. But her heart. And her total transparency shines as the bright light of the sun in the middle of the night. He sees her heart is before and ready to be what he wants. And her example teaches him and teaches us today how to approach our Redeemer. We too bring nothing. We have nothing to redeem ourselves. Absolutely nothing. Nothing to negotiate with. We are destitute. Only we can humble ourselves and have a humble and contrite heart as we kneel before our Redeemer with a broken heart Boaz said, yes. God says, yes. Ruth asked him, spread your wing over me, the corner of your garment over me. And he says, yes. We see Boaz protecting her not only in person in the events that took place here, but also her reputation, her purity, and he carefully and thoughtfully protects her from the harm, even of wrong opinions of this occasion. It seems as if he, God, has been eager for this request to occur. God has been eager for our hearts to come to this as well. Do you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? God has been eager. Boaz has done the bookwork. He knows exactly what's going on. He's done the investigation. He knows who's the first relative. He knows everything. He's ready. He's been ready. He's just been waiting. Remember the last quality? They have to be asked. He's been waiting. And he quickly says yes and responds by saying, I will make this right before the Lord. He doesn't send her away quickly without a gift, a massive gift. As much grain as she can carry, she took back to Naomi. Now Boaz gets up right early in the morning and he heads to the gate. Ruth goes back to Naomi. As she gets there, Naomi is up, ready to hear the next story. And after she tells him everything that took place, it tells her everything that took place, Naomi responds with one word. One word. Wait. Wait. Well, that's a strange response. No, it isn't. You see, God tells us in one word, we do what we're supposed to do and wait. Wait. She says, be still, my daughter. Wait. And that word is used a bunch of times in the Old Testament. For example, Psalm 23, you're familiar with that. The phrase at the end there, it says, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That word dwell is the same word here. Wait, be still. Pause. Put your life on. Wait. 27 also, I will dwell in the house of the Lord. Chapter 33, let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. There are a lot of things that happen in this life that we get impatient about. And if she hadn't have said that, this would have been one of those moments. You know, have you ever been so anticipating something that you're toe-tapping, you're fidgeting, you're walking, you're pacing back and forth? Oh, yeah, we've all been there, haven't we? We've been doing a lot of that waiting lately in the quarantine and such. But there's times when we're called upon, even by God, to wait. Because you see, his timing is always right. His timing has a purpose. And if we have been put on pause, there's a reason for it. There's an opportunity that is being granted to us to trust and obey. We live in a society that has no patience for waiting. They see it as a waste of time, and going to a waiting room is an annoyance to just about everyone. But we actually do ourselves harm if we let the clock control our attitude. When we're called upon to wait, it can be a training ground of character to deepen our relationship with God, to ground ourselves in his grace, to trust in his mercy, and align ourselves with his purpose. If you doubt that, look at Psalm chapter 30. 7, beginning with verse 3. Here, as you see it come on the screen, let me underline these words in your heart. Trust in the Lord. Dwell in the land. Feed on his favor. Delight yourself. Commit your ways. Trust also in him, and he will bring forth. And rest in the Lord and wait patiently on him. Do not fret. Do we get the message here? Do not fret. Do not get upset. There is a time when it is appropriate for us to wait once we've done all that we can do, and now it's totally up to the Lord, then we should just wait and let that grow the character in us that He wants. So let me close this out with these thoughts. We find Boaz going outside the city gate at daybreak to settle this matter. Eager, probably the very first one there. And then, very early, the first in line redeemer shows up. He quickly gathers witnesses, 10 elders at the gate to witness what was about to take place. He proposes. At first he accepts till he finds out there's a woman in tow. Then he denies it. And he says, okay, I will take this responsibility. And the man grabs his shoe off and gives it to him as a proof in front of these elders. 10 of them. It only took 3, but 10 of them to be able to witness this transaction to take place. And so Boaz accepts that shoe, saying, I am willing to pay all the costs, to absorb any criticism, to cover all the debt, to make any sacrifice in order to redeem the one he loves, and to publicly take Ruth to be his wife. Whew, that's a lot. Yes, it is. Remember, I started with, this is not a picture of Boaz and Ruth. This is a picture of us. Think about that same list I just gave you. Jesus sealed the covenant outside the city walls on the cross. He stood in our shoes to pay the debt that we owed. He absorbed the flack, the problems, the criticism, the punishment that we deserved. He made the ultimate sacrifice to redeem the ones he loves and publicly took his bride in the agreement that he might be able to award to them, that they might be able to live happily ever after. You see why this is such a love story. The book of Ruth ends with the sweetness of Naomi that she could never have imagined, even though she had been broken, disillusioned, seduced. Her eyes were now open to the goodness of God. She experiences this romance of God to the redemption and salvation of her family. Can we see the eternal providence of God romancing his children, inviting them home and live happily ever after? It's truly the words of a wonderful story. But it's going on right now. Have you been so seduced by sin? Have you been so seared by the horrible fruit of sin? Is there a train wreck that is following you? God says, I'll erase all that. Take it away. I'll buy you. Come on. Become one of my children. Become part of my bride, that you may be able to truly, eternally live happily ever after. The choice is ours. We're going to sing this song to encourage.